Every day, life asks you to do something difficult, to wake up when you don't feel like it, to stay calm when everything around you burns, to take action even when doubt whispers louder than reason. And most people break in those moments, not because they're weak, but because they've trained their mind for comfort, not for courage. The truth is, the mind is like a muscle. It adapts to what you repeat. If you keep choosing ease, it becomes allergic to effort. If you avoid discomfort, it starts to mistake safety for peace. And when that happens, the smallest challenge feels unbearable. But the Stoics knew something modern life keeps forgetting. Growth and comfort never coexist. They understood that strength isn't something you're born with. It's something you build, one act of discipline at a time. They practiced hardship on purpose. They didn't wait for life to force them into resilience. They created it through choice. Epictetus, born a slave, became one of history's greatest teachers. Not because the world gave him power, but because he refused to give the world his mind. That's what this episode is about. It's not about staying strong, it's about learning how to train your mind to become strong, to face resistance without flinching, to embrace pain without losing your peace, to rise above the part of you that seeks comfort, and listen instead to the part that seeks greatness. And that begins with a single principle. The obstacle isn't your enemy. The obstacle is your training ground. Every time you meet something hard, whether it's fear, failure, rejection, or delay, life is handing you the exact material you need to build the person you're meant to become. So today, as you listen, don't just absorb these ideas, apply them. Pick one challenge in your life right now, something that feels impossible or exhausting. Then walk with me through these 15 Stoic lessons. Watch how every resistance you've been avoiding slowly becomes your greatest teacher. Because this isn't about doing hard things just to suffer, it's about doing hard things so your mind remembers what it's made of. Let's begin. 1. Confront resistance with courage. Resistance is the invisible wall between who you are and who you could be. It doesn't show up as a monster you can see. It shows up as hesitation, as that small voice that whispers, "Not today, maybe tomorrow." It shows up every time you feel the pull to grow, but also the temptation to stay safe. You'll feel it in your chest when you're about to speak up for yourself. You'll feel it when you're standing on the edge of a big decision. You'll feel it when you look at your goals and quietly think, "Who am I to do this?" That's resistance, the mind's way of defending its comfort zone. Most people spend their entire lives negotiating with it, trying to reason with fear instead of walking through it. They think they're waiting for the right time, when in truth, they're waiting for courage to appear without action. And that day never comes. The Stoics knew this. They faced hardship not as misfortune, but as their true arena. Epictetus taught that resistance is not the enemy. It's the proof that you're on the right path. "The greater the difficulty," he said, "the more glory in surmounting it." Skillful pilots gain their reputation from storms and tempests. Every time you avoid what scares you, that resistance grows stronger. Every time you face it, even imperfectly, it weakens. That's the paradox. Courage doesn't mean you stop feeling fear. It means you stop letting fear make your decisions. Courage is not an emotion. It's a commitment. It's the quiet decision to move forward despite what your nerves are screaming. If you wait until you feel ready, you'll never begin. Courage happens first, comfort comes later. And often, it never comes at all. Because the point of doing hard things isn't to find ease, it's to build endurance. So when you feel that familiar tension in your chest, the hesitation before sending the message, making the change, speaking your truth, understand this: resistance is the threshold. It's the invitation. It's the line separating the life you have from the life you could live. In that moment, pause. Take a breath. Don't fight the fear. Observe it. Don't resist the discomfort. accept it, and then take the step anyway. That single act, the moment you move while afraid, rewires your mind faster than any motivational speech ever could, because your brain learns through evidence, not intention. When you act through fear, you give it new data. I survived. I did it anyway. Over time, that repetition builds emotional armor. What used to terrify you becomes your new baseline. What used to drain you becomes fuel. You stop negotiating with resistance and start using it as a compass. Wherever resistance shows up, that's where growth is hiding. And here's the truth most people never learn. Fear doesn't fade with avoidance. It fades with exposure. Every time you face it, it shrinks. Every time you run, it grows teeth. So confront it. Look straight at the discomfort, not recklessly, but willingly. Because courage isn't something you're born with. It's something you build every time you refuse to let fear have the final say. And maybe that's the point of this whole stoic path, to realize that bravery isn't loud or heroic. It's quiet. It's personal. It's the moment you do what's difficult, alone, when no one's watching. That's the moment your character begins to take shape, because on the other side of resistance is freedom. 2. Train your judgment, not just your will. Most people try to conquer hard things with sheer willpower. They grind, they push, they force themselves through exhaustion, and for a while, it works. But eventually their strength runs out, because willpower is like a battery. It drains. Judgment, on the other hand, is like a compass. It doesn't lose power. It gives direction. That's the difference between temporary effort and lasting mastery. When you rely only on willpower, you're constantly at war with yourself. You're fighting your impulses, your fears, your laziness, your moods. You're swimming against your own mind, hoping brute force will get you across. But when you train your judgment, you start to understand the game on a deeper level. You stop asking, "How do I make this easier?" and start asking, "How can I make this meaningful?" That's where the Stoic strength lives, not in blind endurance, but in wise perception. Epictetus taught that no event is good or bad, only our judgment makes it so. Pain doesn't break you, your interpretation of pain does. Failure doesn't destroy you, the story you attach to it does. A Stoic doesn't simply grit their teeth through life, they refine their judgment until every challenge becomes a teacher. That's why you see some people face the same difficulty and come out bitter, while others come out wiser. It's not luck, it's perception. To train your judgment, you must first slow down the reflex to react. Most people respond to discomfort instantly. They flinch, complain, retreat, or attack. The Stoic pauses. They observe. They analyze what's within their control and what isn't. And that small pause, that breath of awareness, changes everything. Because now, instead of being ruled by emotion, you've stepped into reason. The next step is reframing. When something difficult happens, instead of saying, "Why me?" you ask, "What is this teaching me?" That single question turns obstacles into curriculum. Life stops being punishment and starts being preparation. Imagine waking up tomorrow and deciding to see everything that frustrates you, the delays, the rejections, the discomfort, as part of your training. Instead of labeling them bad days, you'd see them as resistance training for the mind. And soon, that mental reframing becomes instinct. You stop wasting energy on emotional overreaction. You start conserving it for purposeful response. That's what separates emotional strength from impulsive survival. Judgment is what keeps you stable when motivation fades. It's what reminds you that just because something feels difficult doesn't mean it's wrong. In fact, most of the time, difficulty is proof that you're finally doing something meaningful. Seneca wrote, "Difficulties strengthen the mind as labor does the body." But notice, he didn't say they strengthen everyone. They only strengthen the person who chooses to interpret them that way. And this is the beauty of Stoic psychology. You get to decide what anything means. You can see rejection as humiliation or redirection. You can see failure as proof you're done or proof you've started. You can see pain as suffering or sculpting. Judgment shapes experience. When you train your judgment, you no longer need to constantly fight yourself into action. Your actions flow naturally from your perspective, because when you see difficulty as opportunity, resistance becomes irrelevant. That's how Stoics stay calm in chaos. Not because they feel no emotion, but because they've learned to assign the right meaning to the moment. So if your willpower feels weak, don't try to strengthen it by force. Strengthen your lens, refine your interpretation, practice seeing things as they are, not as your fear paints them. Because life is not testing your limits, it's testing your perspective. And when you train your judgment, your will never runs out. 3. Move with the flow of nature. There's a moment every person meets when life refuses to cooperate. When the plan you built so carefully begins to crumble, when the timing feels wrong, when no matter how hard you push, nothing moves. That's the point where most people lose heart. They tense up, fight harder, and exhaust themselves against what they can't control. But the Stoic learns something different. When the river changes direction, you don't curse the current, you learn to move with it. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "What stands in the way becomes the way." It sounds poetic, but it's brutally practical. He meant that everything which seems to block you is secretly guiding you, if you stop resisting long enough to listen. Life isn't against you. It's instructing you. When you fight reality, you multiply your pain. You start adding layers of resistance to what's already difficult. You turn one problem into two, the event itself, and your reaction to it. You don't just experience frustration, you resent it. You don't just feel fear, you judge yourself for it. You don't just encounter failure, you label it as a verdict on your worth. That's how most people live, in constant resistance to what already is. But the Stoic mind sees differently. It realizes that life's rhythm isn't chaos, it's a kind of choreography. Sometimes the step forward is the fall backward. Sometimes what looks like delay is divine timing. Sometimes the rejection you feared is the detour that saves you. The key isn't control, it's cooperation. To move with the flow of nature means to stop fighting what you cannot change and to fully engage with what you can. It's not passivity, it's precision. When something goes wrong, the untrained mind asks, "Why me?" The Stoic asks, "How do I move with this?" Because movement itself is power. Stillness in the wrong place becomes stagnation. But movement, even through difficulty, becomes growth. Nature itself teaches this. Trees don't fight the wind, they bend. The river doesn't rage against the rocks. It flows around them, carving its path over time. Fire doesn't complain about the wood. It consumes it and becomes brighter. That's not surrender. That's mastery. And you too are part of nature. When you align with it, when you stop expecting life to match your script, something changes inside you. Stress loosens its grip. Anxiety softens. You stop needing the world to behave before you find peace. You find peace within the unpredictability. Because now you understand, every obstacle is an invitation. The Stoic doesn't pray for the storm to pass, he trains to navigate it. That's why Marcus wrote in his journal, "A blazing fire makes flame and brightness out of everything that is thrown into it." Imagine living like that, so centered that nothing life throws at you can extinguish you. Every challenge becomes oxygen, every disappointment becomes raw material. That's the art of moving with the flow of nature. It doesn't mean you never feel frustration. It means frustration no longer controls you. It means when plans collapse, you don't collapse with them. You observe, adapt, and act calmly, efficiently, purposefully. And perhaps most importantly, it means you stop demanding that life be easy and start demanding that you be capable. So, the next time you feel blocked, pause, look at the obstacle not as a wall, but as a teacher. Ask, what is this showing me about myself, about patience, about strength? Then, let go of the need to control the current. Swim with it, not against it. Because the moment you stop fighting reality, it starts guiding you. And that's when life stops feeling like a battlefield and starts feeling like a conversation. 4. Find stillness before you act. There's a kind of chaos that doesn't come from the world. It comes from within you. That mental noise that won't stop talking, even when you're silent. The racing thoughts, the endless what-ifs, the emotional turbulence that clouds every decision. You try to force yourself to act, but your actions feel scattered, impulsive, reactive. It's not that you don't know what to do. It's that your mind is too loud to hear what's true. The Stoics understood that real strength begins in stillness. Marcus Aurelius ruled the most powerful empire in the world, yet every morning he reminded himself, "You have power over your mind, not outside events." Realize this, and you will find strength. He faced betrayal, war, and death. But before he acted, he paused. Because he knew what most people never learn. Clarity precedes courage. The untrained mind mistakes motion for progress. It reacts, it rushes, it pushes, and often makes things worse. The Stoic mind, however, practices restraint, not hesitation, but deliberate control. It pauses just long enough to detach emotion from impulse. That space, that breath between reaction and response, is where wisdom lives. Stillness doesn't mean doing nothing. It means doing nothing unconsciously. It's the ability to stop the storm before it becomes a decision, to breathe deeply when your chest tightens, to delay judgment when anger demands immediacy, to wait, not out of weakness, but out of strength. Because you know that emotion is temporary, but consequences are not. Seneca said, "There is no need to hurry, it is not a race. The universe always moves at its own rhythm." That's not passivity. It's precision. It's choosing to let your emotions settle before you steer the ship. Imagine a warrior sharpening his sword before battle. That's what stillness is, the sharpening of thought before action. Without it, you fight blindly. With it, every move becomes intentional. But finding stillness in a noisy world is hard. We live in constant stimulation, endless scrolling, buzzing notifications, flashing headlines. Our attention is fragmented before the day even begins. That's why we confuse urgency with importance, movement with meaning, and slowly our inner compass erodes. So how do you find stillness when your mind refuses to quiet down? You practice it like a discipline, not a mood. Start small. 5 minutes before your day begins. No phone, no distractions, just breathe. Observe your thoughts without judging them. Don't try to stop them. Let them rise and fall like waves. The goal isn't silence, it's space. Because space gives you perspective. Throughout the day, pause before responding. Notice the urge to react instantly, to text back, to argue, to defend, to explain. Then do something radical. Wait. Let the emotion pass through before you act. That small act of restraint trains your nervous system to serve you, not sabotage you. Over time, this becomes your superpower. You stop living on autopilot. You start seeing through emotion instead of being blinded by it. You stop overreacting to small things, and as a result, you gain the strength to handle the big ones. And here's the paradox. The more still you become inside, the more unstoppable you become outside. Because stillness isn't passive, it's focused power. When the mind is calm, perception becomes sharp. Decisions become clean. You stop being dragged by impulse and start moving from intention. And suddenly, doing hard things no longer feels chaotic. It feels deliberate. That's how the Stoic moves, slow in mind, decisive in action, like a surgeon, steady, precise, detached from panic. So before you act, stop. Before you speak, breathe. Before you react, observe, because stillness is not weakness, it's control. It's the moment your emotions bow to your judgment. And when you master that, no challenge can shake you. 5. Make virtue a daily habit. The world loves grand gestures, the big achievements, the dramatic transformations, the overnight success stories. But life, in reality, is not changed by moments of inspiration. It's shaped by moments of repetition. The Stoics understood this better than anyone. They didn't chase intensity. They built consistency. They believed that greatness is not a single act of strength, but a thousand small acts of discipline, done quietly, without applause, until the character becomes unbreakable. Seneca once wrote, "Excellence withers without constant practice." He meant that virtue, the inner strength that anchors your actions, isn't something you think about once and then possess forever. It's a living practice. It needs tending, like a flame that dies if ignored. Every day you wake up with two choices, to be pulled by impulse or to be guided by principle. Most people choose the first without even noticing. They live by moods. If they feel motivated, they act. If they feel tired, they stop. If someone offends them, they react. If someone praises them, they thrive. But to the Stoic, this is slavery, being ruled by the weather of your emotions instead of the structure of your will. Virtue, courage, discipline, honesty, temperance, justice, these aren't abstract ideas. They're muscles. They grow through use. It's easy to talk about integrity when no one's testing it. Easy to talk about patience when life is smooth. Easy to say, "I'm strong," when nothing challenges that claim. But what do you do when temptation shows up? When irritation burns? When fear whispers, "Just give up"? That's when the real practice begins. The Stoics didn't measure progress by comfort or success. They measured it by how quickly they returned to virtue when shaken. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "When you are jarred, return at once to yourself, and don't lose the rhythm more than you must." That's the rhythm of daily discipline, the rhythm of self-correction. You don't need perfection, you need return. That means when you break your routine, you don't spiral into guilt. You come back to it the next morning. When you lose your temper, you don't shame yourself endlessly. You reflect, apologize if needed, and realign your actions. When you fail a goal, you don't quit. You learn, adjust, and restart. Every return strengthens the habit. Every repetition deepens the virtue. And here's the beauty of it. The more consistent you become, the less effort you need. What was once hard becomes automatic. What used to drain you becomes natural. You stop needing motivation because your habits carry you. That's what Seneca meant when he said, "We become brave by doing brave acts." You don't wait to feel disciplined to live with discipline. You act disciplined until your mind adapts. Think of it this way. Your habits are your silent mentors. They shape you in ways you don't even notice. If you practice distraction every day, you become scattered. If you practice self-control every day, you become steady. If you practice honesty, even in small moments, you become free. This is how Stoicism lives, not in grand speeches, but in small, invisible victories. Waking up early when no one watches, finishing the work even when no one applauds, doing the right thing when it would be easier not to. Each small act is a vote for the person you want to become. Each repetition is a brick in the foundation of your peace. So don't chase extreme motivation. Chase consistency. Don't wait for clarity to appear. Build it through repetition. Don't worry about being perfect. Worry about returning to your principles every day. Because one day, you'll look up and realize the habits you built, quietly, have become the armor that protects you from everything loud. And that's when you'll understand, virtue was never about rules. It was about rhythm, the rhythm of becoming the person you respect. One small act at a time. 6. Start small, then strengthen. Everyone dreams of transformation, of becoming disciplined, fearless, focused, calm. But most people quit before they ever begin, not because they lack desire, but because they underestimate the power of small beginnings. They think greatness requires massive leaps, when in truth, it's built one deliberate step at a time. The Stoics knew that the mind, like the body, can't be reshaped overnight. Growth is a gradual unfolding. Strength is a slow construction. Epictetus compared it to training in a gymnasium. You wouldn't lift the heaviest weight first. You'd start with what you can manage and increase over time. The same is true of your mind. You start where you are, not where you wish you were. But modern life conditions us to expect speed, quick results, overnight success. We scroll, we compare, we see instant highlight reels, and forget that the invisible foundation always takes the longest to build. The Stoic doesn't rush the process because they understand that rushing destroys roots. Discipline built too fast collapses under pressure. Focus built on adrenaline fades with fatigue. But the slow kind, the kind built through small, consistent acts, becomes unshakable. Start small. That's not weakness, it's wisdom. When you take on too much, your brain registers threat, and the nervous system resists change. But when you start small, your mind learns safety. It begins to associate progress with possibility, not pain. That's how you rebuild trust with yourself. You stop breaking promises by setting goals you can't sustain and start proving reliability with small, repeatable wins. The Stoics never measured strength by intensity, they measured it by endurance. Marcus Aurelius didn't preach grand gestures, he practiced quiet consistency, journaling each morning, reflecting each night, returning to the same questions over and over. Am I living according to my principles? Am I better today than yesterday? Small but daily, repetitive but transformative. That's the secret to real mastery, repetition with awareness, because repetition without awareness becomes routine. But repetition done consciously becomes evolution. And here's the paradox. The smaller your steps, the faster you grow. When you focus on one simple action, waking up 10 minutes earlier, taking one deep breath before reacting, doing one extra repetition at the gym, you build momentum. And momentum, not motivation, is what keeps you moving through difficulty. Every small act carries a message to your subconscious, I am capable, and your mind, hearing that enough times, begins to believe it. Slowly, the inner critic quiets down. The resistance softens. What once felt impossible begins to feel inevitable. That's how the Stoics built strength, through patience, not pressure. Seneca once said, "It is not that we have a short time to live, but that we waste much of it. And one of the ways we waste it most is by waiting for perfect conditions before starting." The wise person doesn't wait. They begin imperfectly, quietly, today. So, ask yourself, what small action can I take right now that aligns with the person I want to become? Not the grand version, the practical one, because consistency beats perfection. If you want to learn courage, speak once when you'd normally stay silent. If you want to train patience, breathe once before reacting. If you want to master your focus, finish one task fully before starting another. And when you do, celebrate it. Not with noise, but with awareness. Because every small victory tells your mind, this is who I am now. In time, those small victories compound into confidence. That confidence becomes character, and that character becomes destiny. Start small, strengthen daily, grow endlessly, because the Stoic way is not about speed, it's about solidity. And if you stay faithful to small beginnings, even the hardest things will one day bow to your discipline. 7. Picture the value, not the struggle. Every time you face something difficult, your mind paints a picture, and that picture decides whether you keep going or quit. For most people, that picture is all struggle. They see the exhaustion, the effort, the grind. They imagine the discomfort so vividly that their body reacts as if it's already suffering. Their breathing tightens, their motivation drops, and they never even start. But here's the truth the Stoics understood. Pain is rarely what stops you. It's your imagination of it. When Marcus Aurelius wrote, "If you are pained by external things, it is not they that disturb you, but your own judgment of them," he wasn't dismissing suffering. He was reframing it. He was teaching that your mind, left untrained, magnifies hardship into catastrophe, but a trained mind can look at the same challenge and see not the pain, but the potential. The difference between misery and mastery is perspective. When you imagine doing something hard, working long hours, having a difficult conversation, staying disciplined while others relax, your mind automatically focuses on loss. I'll lose comfort. I'll lose ease. I'll lose approval. But when you reframe your vision and see the value behind the effort, the entire experience changes. Effort no longer feels like suffering. It starts to feel like shaping. Every challenge becomes an opportunity to sharpen your mind, to build patience, to strengthen your identity. What looks like sacrifice becomes self-respect. What feels like endurance becomes empowerment. Because when you focus on the value, not the struggle, you're no longer a victim of effort. You're an investor in growth. Picture it this way. When you exercise, your body doesn't grow because of comfort. It grows because of resistance. The weights aren't punishment, they're feedback. The same is true of the mind. Each time you do something hard, resist distraction, face fear, endure discomfort, you're training your inner muscles. The pain you feel isn't breaking you, it's building you. The Stoics didn't glamorize hardship, they just refused to waste it. They believed pain could polish character, just as friction polishes stone. Epictetus, who was once enslaved and physically crippled, said, "Difficulties show what men are." He didn't say they create greatness out of nothing. He said they reveal it. So when hardship comes, don't ask, "How do I escape this?" Ask instead, "What is this revealing about me? What quality is this moment calling forward? Courage, patience, humility, or strength?" When you start viewing challenges this way, you stop seeing them as punishment and start seeing them as precision tools, sculpting you into who you're meant to be. And this reframing is powerful because your brain follows your focus. Neuroscience proves this. The more you visualize the value of your actions, the more your brain associates effort with reward. It begins releasing dopamine not just when you finish something hard, but while you're doing it. That's how high performers stay consistent. They've trained their minds to link struggle with satisfaction. You can do the same. Before you face something difficult, close your eyes and imagine the result, not the fantasy, but the version of you who exists after enduring it. Picture their calmness, their strength, their quiet pride. Feel the dignity that comes from following through. That feeling, that's your reward. And the beautiful thing is, you don't have to wait to have it. You can tap into it every time you take a step forward. So the next time you say, "This is hard," finish the sentence, "But it's making me better." Because once you focus on the value, the struggle loses its teeth. You no longer resist pain, you repurpose it. You no longer chase comfort, you chase character. And that shift in vision changes everything. Pain stops feeling like an enemy. Effort stops feeling like punishment. And life, even at its hardest, starts to feel like progress. That's the Stoic art. Not to erase difficulty, but to use it. Because the mind trained to see value in the struggle never wastes a single challenge again. 8. Let pain refine you. Pain is a teacher most people refuse to learn from. They see it as an interruption, a punishment, something to escape as quickly as possible. But the Stoics saw pain differently, not as an enemy to run from, but as a forge to step into. Because if you run from every form of pain, you also run from every form of growth. Life will test you in ways you don't choose. You'll lose people you love. You'll face rejection that stings deeper than words can describe. You'll work hard for something and watch it fall apart. And in those moments, you'll be tempted to numb it, to distract yourself, to fill the silence with noise so you don't have to feel the weight of it. But that's the moment where transformation begins, if you allow it. Pain doesn't destroy you. Resistance to pain does. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "If you are distressed by anything external, the pain is not due to the thing itself, but to your estimate of it, and this you have the power to revoke at any moment." What he meant is that pain becomes suffering only when we fight it, when we demand that life be different from what it is. To let pain refine you is to let it speak, to let it show you what it's trying to teach rather than silencing it with distractions. Because pain always comes with information. It shows you where you're attached to illusions, where you've been living without awareness, where you still believe comfort equals peace. It humbles you, it cracks the ego, and in that crack, light gets in. Think of a blacksmith at work. The fire doesn't ruin the metal, it purifies it. The hammer doesn't break it, it shapes it. Each strike, each wave of heat, pulls weakness to the surface so it can be burned away. That's exactly what pain does to the soul. It burns off everything unnecessary. Pride, entitlement, naivety, dependence on others for validation. When you stop running from pain, you start learning from it. Instead of asking, "Why me?" the Stoic asks, "Why now? What is this preparing me for?" That one question turns tragedy into training. Epictetus was beaten so severely as a slave that his leg broke, permanently. "But even then," he said, "do not seek for events to happen as you wish, but wish for them to happen as they do, and your life will flow smoothly." He didn't mean enjoy suffering. He meant recognize its function. It's shaping something unseen inside you. Endurance, patience, grace, perspective. You can resist it or you can be refined by it. When you're refined by pain, you don't become harder. You become clearer. You begin to see what truly matters. The drama you once obsessed over loses its grip. The opinions of others lose their power. The noise of the world fades. And what remains is something pure, the ability to stand in discomfort without losing your center. That's strength, not the loud, aggressive kind, but the quiet, unwavering kind that comes from someone who has already walked through fire and no longer fears the burn. To practice this, don't wait for pain to arrive. Train yourself to meet discomfort intentionally. Sleep without your comfort. Work without distraction. Sit in silence long enough to feel the itch of boredom or the ache of emotion. And stay there. Not to punish yourself, but to build presence. Because pain handled with awareness becomes power. When life hits hard, instead of asking, "How do I make this stop?" ask, "How can this make me stronger?" That one mental shift turns suffering into refinement. It stops being something happening to you and becomes something happening for you. And every time you survive something you thought would break you, your relationship with pain changes. You stop fearing it. You start respecting it. You realize it's not there to hurt you. It's there to show you what you're made of. So when pain comes, and it will, don't run. Don't resist. Stand in it, breathe through it, and let it carve away what's weak, false, and temporary. Because what's left after pain has done its work is truth, and truth never breaks. 9. Be patient with time, urgent with action. We live in an age that worships speed, fast results, instant feedback, overnight success. We measure our worth by how quickly we achieve, how soon we arrive, how much we can do in a day. But the Stoics looked at time differently. They understood that true growth happens in layers, invisible, gradual, unhurried. You can't rush the sunrise, you can't force a seed to bloom, and you can't demand instant transformation without destroying the depth it was meant to have. Patience is not passivity, it's faith in process. It's the understanding that what's meant to grow deep cannot grow fast. Yet, patience alone isn't enough. The Stoics didn't sit still and wait for life to unfold. They acted with urgency, but without anxiety. They understood the paradox of discipline. Move swiftly in effort, but slowly in expectation. Marcus Aurelius lived this truth daily. As emperor, his schedule was relentless. Wars, politics, betrayal, loss. But every morning he wrote to himself, "Do every act of your life as though it were the last." That wasn't dramatization, it was a way of compressing urgency into the present moment. He knew that wasting time was the one sin even wisdom couldn't forgive. And yet, he also wrote, "No one hurries a vine to bear grapes before its season." He understood both sides. Act now, but let the results take their time. This is the balance most people never learn. They either rush so fast that they burn out before the seed sprouts, or they wait so long for perfect timing that the opportunity dies in their hands. The Stoic finds the middle path, patient with time, urgent with action. So what does that look like in real life? It means you stop waiting to feel ready. You stop waiting for fear to vanish. You stop waiting for certainty before taking a step. You move, even when the future is foggy, because the act of moving itself creates clarity. But once you've taken that step, you also stop demanding that every action produce immediate results. You learn to sow with faith, to water with consistency, and to let time handle the rest. That's why Stoicism feels so calm. It's built on the confidence that effort is enough. You don't need control over the outcome. You just need control over your behavior. Seneca said, "It is not that we have a short time to live, but that we waste much of it." We waste it by waiting for motivation, by comparing our chapter 1 to someone's chapter 10, by quitting when progress feels slow. But time isn't your enemy. Your impatience is. Imagine a sculptor chiseling a statue. To an outsider, the progress seems invisible. Days go by and the marble looks unchanged. But the sculptor knows what the eye can't see. Every stroke removes what doesn't belong. That's what your effort is doing, even when you can't see the results. And here's the truth. Nothing meaningful grows in the same season it's planted. Everything takes its time to root, to settle, to integrate. The Stoic accepts this and keeps going. Because patience is power. It keeps you grounded when your ego wants to sprint. And urgency is fuel. It keeps you moving when comfort wants to rest. When those two forces unite, you become unstoppable. Be patient with the unfolding of your life. You're not late, you're not behind. You're right on schedule for the lessons you're meant to learn. But also, stop wasting your days in hesitation. The moment you hear that whisper, "Maybe tomorrow," let that be your cue to act today. Because progress doesn't care how long it takes, it only cares that you start. So move now, work quietly, wait calmly. And trust that time, like the seasons, never forgets what you've planted. 10. Honor every step forward. We live in a world obsessed with milestones. The big wins, the finished product, the transformation that looks impressive on camera. But life doesn't unfold in grand gestures. It moves in inches, in quiet repetitions, in small, invisible choices that no one ever claps for. Most people overlook these moments because they don't look like progress. But the Stoics knew every step forward, no matter how small, is sacred. Because real change is not built in leaps. It's built in the consistency of showing up when no one's watching. You may think you haven't accomplished much because you're still far from where you want to be. But pause for a moment. Think of the version of you from a year ago, the one who doubted they could even start. The one who couldn't handle what you handle now. the one who didn't know how to stay calm under pressure. That version would look at you today and be proud. The Stoic doesn't measure progress by distance traveled, they measure it by direction. If you're walking toward virtue, toward clarity, toward self-mastery, even if it's slow, even if you stumble, you are winning. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "Don't be ashamed of needing help. You've climbed enough of a mountain to know that help is a step, not a setback." That's humility, and that's strength. Every step forward deserves respect, even the imperfect ones, especially the imperfect ones, because every act of effort is an act of defiance against the part of you that wanted to give up. Every repetition builds a little more trust between you and yourself. That trust is what creates discipline. Not pressure, not guilt, but integrity. It's easy to celebrate the days you feel powerful. The real test is whether you can honor the days you simply tried. Seneca said, "The one who has made a beginning is already half done." He knew that movement itself, even a small one, carries power. It keeps the flame alive. Because momentum doesn't come from speed, it comes from continuation. When you honor every step forward, you stop poisoning your progress with impatience. You stop comparing yourself to others who seem further. You stop dismissing your small wins because they don't feel big enough. You begin to see what Stoicism always pointed toward, that peace comes not from arrival, but from alignment. And something magical happens when you live that way. You begin to love the process more than the prize. You start finding meaning in the morning you showed up tired, but did it anyway. In the moment you caught yourself before reacting with anger. In the quiet evening, you reflected on your mistakes instead of running from them. These moments don't make headlines, but they make character. You stop being addicted to outcomes. You fall in love with effort. And that shift transforms your entire life. Because the more you honor your progress, the more your mind learns that effort itself is rewarding. You start releasing dopamine not just when you win, but when you work. That's the real secret behind resilience. You stop needing validation to continue. So if today all you managed was one small victory, one good decision, one moment of awareness, one disciplined act, honor it, name it. Appreciate it, because every step forward is one less step controlled by your old self. You may not be where you want to be yet, but you're not where you were, and that space in between, that's growth. The Stoic doesn't demand perfection from the day. They just ask one question before sleep. Did I live better today than yesterday? If the answer is yes, even slightly, then the day was enough. Because mastery isn't built in massive victories. It's built in quiet persistence. And every small act of self-mastery is proof that you're already becoming who you were meant to be. 11. Practice voluntary discomfort. Comfort feels safe, but it's a slow poison. It dulls your instincts, weakens your edge, and convinces you that peace and ease are the same thing. They're not. Comfort gives you rest, yes, but too much of it robs you of readiness. You lose the sharpness that keeps you alive to challenge, to growth, to purpose. And that's why the Stoics, men who lived through wars, loss, exile, and scarcity, didn't wait for life to harden them. They trained for it. Epictetus told his students to practice hardship before it arrived. Marcus Aurelius, Emperor of Rome, reminded himself each morning that the day ahead would be filled with obstacles, with irritation, with people ruled by ignorance or pride. Seneca went further. He intentionally slept on hard beds and ate coarse bread, just to remind his mind that he could survive discomfort. He said, "Set aside a certain number of days during which you shall be content with the scantiest and cheapest fare, saying to yourself, 'Is this the condition I feared?'" That's not self-punishment. That's self-preparation. Voluntary discomfort is the act of removing luxury before life removes it for you. It's not about being miserable, it's about being mentally bulletproof. Because if you only function when things are easy, you'll collapse the moment they're not. The Stoic trains by subtraction. They take away comfort on purpose to remember that strength doesn't come from possessions, routines, or external peace. It comes from adaptability. The more you train yourself to do without, the less the world can take from you. When you deliberately choose discomfort, fasting, cold showers, physical exertion, silence, solitude, you expose your mind to controlled difficulty. You tell your nervous system, "I can survive this," and over time, it believes you. You stop panicking when challenges arrive because you've already rehearsed survival. Modern life has made us weak, not because it's evil, but because it's easy. Every minor inconvenience feels catastrophic because we've forgotten that we're built for struggle. Our ancestors endured starvation, war, disease, winters without warmth. And yet here we are, anxious over opinions and inconveniences. The Stoic doesn't romanticize suffering, but they also don't avoid it. They meet it with readiness. Because hardship doesn't create weakness, it reveals it. And only what's revealed can be strengthened. Voluntary discomfort is how you inoculate yourself against life's unpredictability. It's how you teach your mind not to panic when reality doesn't go your way. When you train with less, you learn that peace is not comfort, it's competence. So, what does this look like in practice? It's not about extreme asceticism. It's about small, deliberate discomforts that sharpen awareness and build tolerance. Leave your phone behind for an hour. Go a day without complaining. Skip a meal to test your discipline. Walk instead of drive. Take the cold shower, not to be tough, but to remind yourself that you can choose difficulty without resentment. Every small act of voluntary discomfort becomes a conversation with your mind. You say, "You're stronger than you think." And little by little, that message takes root. The next time life throws something real at you, an unexpected loss, a financial hit, a broken plan, you won't crumble. Because you'll have already faced discomfort on your own terms. You'll recognize it not as disaster, but as familiar territory. That's the hidden gift of Stoic discipline. You train in small, controlled hardships so you can stand tall in the big, uncontrollable ones. And the more you rehearse adversity, the less it frightens you. So seek moments of discomfort. Not because you enjoy pain, but because you respect strength. Not because you hate comfort, but because you refuse to depend on it. Because every time you choose discomfort willingly, you take one more step toward freedom. Freedom from fear, freedom from weakness, freedom from the illusion that life owes you ease. 12. Silence, the need for approval. Every human being carries a quiet hunger, the desire to be seen, understood, validated. It's natural, but somewhere along the way, that desire starts to take control. You begin to measure your worth by how people react to you, not by how aligned you are with your principles. You chase applause instead of progress. You start performing instead of living. And slowly, without realizing it, you hand your peace over to strangers. The Stoics called this the most dangerous dependency, the dependency on approval, because it disguises itself as connection, but it's actually control. When your happiness depends on what others think, you are no longer free. Marcus Aurelius warned himself of this constantly. "Be content with what you are," he wrote, "and wish not to be different." He ruled an empire, yet reminded himself daily that public opinion was a storm he could not control. "It never ceases to amaze me," he said, "that we all love ourselves more than other people, but care more about their opinion than our own." That's the paradox of approval. We crave authenticity, yet trade it for acceptance. The Stoic doesn't reject people, but they do reject dependence. They understand that virtue, living by wisdom, courage, justice, and temperance, is its own reward. Whether it earns applause or criticism is irrelevant. Because virtue, when practiced sincerely, doesn't need witnesses. Seneca put it bluntly, virtue is not dependent on the opinions of others. He meant that doing the right thing should be self-validating. That if your peace can be stolen by disapproval, it was never peace. It was performance. Think about it. How much of your life's energy goes to maintaining appearances, to proving you're okay, to defending your choices to people who were never meant to understand your path? Every time you adjust your truth to make others comfortable, you dilute your power. And that's how you lose your center. The Stoic mind stands firm in its integrity. It asks only one question: would I still do this if no one ever knew? If the answer is yes, then it's worth doing. Silencing the need for approval doesn't mean becoming arrogant or indifferent. It means becoming independent in your self-respect. It's knowing that you can listen to feedback without being enslaved by it, that you can care for others without abandoning yourself, that you can walk alone without feeling lonely, because solitude built from integrity is richer than company built from pretense. But make no mistake, breaking free from approval is painful at first, because validation feels like oxygen when you've lived without self-trust. You'll feel withdrawal. The silence of not being praised will sting. The absence of attention will feel like rejection, but stay with it, because what's dying isn't you. It's the false version of you that needed constant reassurance to exist. The Stoics practiced this daily detachment. Epictetus reminded his students that reputation is one of those externals you can't control. You can influence it through your character, but you can't command it. And if you chase it, you lose the very character that makes it worth having. So here's the truth. No amount of external approval will ever fill the void left by internal doubt. The only cure for that void is integrity, living in such alignment with your values that you no longer need to explain yourself. When you reach that point, criticism doesn't sting, it informs. Praise doesn't inflate, it humbles. You stop chasing the applause and start chasing the truth. Because when your motivation is pure, your peace is protected. You start to realize that the highest compliment isn't someone saying, "You're amazing." It's being able to look in the mirror and quietly think, "I stayed true." So practice this detachment. Do something today that aligns with your principles and tell no one. Let the act itself be the reward. Because the moment you can live beautifully in silence, you've reclaimed your freedom. As Marcus wrote, it's not that we need to think less of ourselves, but that we need to think of ourselves less. When you live this way, the noise fades, the mind clears. And you remember, approval is fleeting, but authenticity lasts. 13. Anchor yourself in the present moment. The human mind is a restless traveler. It races into the future, rewriting what might happen. It loops back to the past, reanimating what's already over. It pulls you in both directions until you're stretched so thin that you forget where you actually are, here, in this breath, in this body, in this one irreplaceable moment of your life. That's the tragedy of distraction. It makes you physically present, but spiritually absent. You're in the room, but your thoughts are miles away. You're alive, but you're not really living. The Stoics saw this problem 2,000 years ago, long before smartphones or endless notifications. Marcus Aurelius warned himself in his journal, "Confine yourself to the present." He understood that the mind's habit of wandering wasn't just wasteful, it was dangerous, because every time you escape the present, you abandon your power. The present moment is the only place where you can act, decide, change, breathe, love, and grow. Everything else, past and future, exists only as thought. Yet we spend most of our energy worrying about what's gone or what's coming. The past haunts you with guilt. The future taunts you with fear, but neither can touch you unless you open the door. to live anchored in the present doesn't mean ignoring memory or ambition. It means using them wisely as references, not residences. Seneca said it perfectly. True happiness is to enjoy the present without anxious dependence upon the future. He wasn't advocating laziness. He was describing freedom. Because when you fully inhabit the now, you stop being pulled apart by time. You stop suffering from events twice, once when they happen, and again when you relive them in your imagination. Think about how much of your stress comes not from reality, but from your projections. You replay a conversation, editing every word you wish you'd said. You dread a meeting that hasn't even happened yet. You scroll through moments of other people's lives and convince yourself you're behind. None of that is happening now, but your body doesn't know the difference. It releases stress hormones as if the threat were real. Anchoring yourself in the present interrupts that illusion. It brings you back to what's tangible. This breath, this heartbeat, this step. Try this. Next time your thoughts begin to spiral, pause and ask yourself, where am I right now? Your mind might say, I'm lost in worry, but your body will remind you, you're here, you're safe, you're breathing, the room hasn't collapsed, the world hasn't ended. That simple awareness is the start of calm. This is why Stoics practiced mindfulness long before the word existed. They journaled each morning not to control the day, but to enter it consciously. They reviewed each evening not to criticize, but to return to presence. To observe their actions as if from above and say, I live today. Anchoring in the moment doesn't erase your challenges. It just returns your power to where it can be used. You stop wasting energy on things you can't edit or predict. You begin responding instead of reacting. You rediscover your capacity to choose. And slowly, something remarkable happens. Life begins to expand again. Colors seem richer. Time feels slower. Small things, sunlight through a window, the sound of your breath, the warmth of coffee, start to feel like miracles, not because they changed, but because you finally stopped running past them. Presence sharpens perception. Perception deepens gratitude. Gratitude restores peace. When your mind drifts, and it will, gently pull it back again and again. That's the training. That's the practice, because every time you return to the present, you reclaim your life from distraction. And that's what the Stoics called freedom, the ability to be where you are fully, without apology or escape. So the next time your thoughts pull you into the noise of then or next, remember this, the only real moment is now. And if you can master now, you can master everything. 14. Observe the emotion, don't obey it. Emotions are powerful messengers, but terrible masters. They arrive suddenly, speak loudly, and demand obedience. Anger commands, strike back. Fear whispers, run. Doubt insists, you're not ready. And most people obey without question, mistaking impulse for truth. But the Stoic learns something radical. You don't have to believe everything you feel. Epictetus said, it's not things that disturb us, but our judgments about things. He meant that events are neutral until we interpret them. The emotion that follows is not reality itself. It's your mind's reaction to it. And reactions, like waves, rise and fade. When you learn to observe emotion instead of obeying it, you reclaim your freedom. Think about it. How many regrets in your life came from moments you were swept away by feeling, words said in anger, decisions made in fear, opportunities avoided because anxiety disguised itself as intuition? In those moments, emotion became the driver and reason sat quietly in the back seat. The Stoic doesn't deny emotion, they decode it. They pause long enough to ask, what is this feeling trying to tell me? Because every emotion contains information, but only if you listen without surrendering. Anger might reveal an unmet need for respect. Fear might highlight an area of growth. Sadness might signal attachment to something impermanent. but if you obey the emotion blindly, you miss the message it carries. Marcus Aurelius practiced this constantly. He wrote to himself, "Remember, you have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this, and you will find strength." When he felt irritation or grief, he didn't suppress it. He studied it. He observed it as a phenomenon of the mind, a ripple in consciousness, not an identity. That's what emotional mastery truly is, not the absence of feeling, but the space between feeling and reaction. Imagine standing on a riverbank watching emotions flow past. Some are calm, others violent. You don't jump into every current. You observe, you breathe, you let the water pass. That's how the Stoic treats emotion, with distance, with curiosity, with discipline, but observation takes courage. Because to observe emotion is to feel it fully without escaping into distraction. Most people confuse suppression with control. They bottle their emotions, smile on the surface, and call it strength. But suppression is just delayed explosion. Observation, on the other hand, transforms energy into understanding. When you watch your anger rise and you don't react, you discover that it peaks and fades on its own. When you feel fear but still take the step, you realize courage isn't the absence of fear. It's moving through it. When sadness visits and you let it sit beside you, you see it soften into clarity. This is emotional alchemy, turning raw feeling into wisdom. The Stoic trains for this through awareness, journaling to understand triggers, breathing to calm the nervous system, reflection to separate fact from interpretation. Each practice widens the space between emotion and action. And in that space, you find freedom. Because once you realize you are not your emotion, you can choose your response. No one can take that from you. Not circumstances, not people, not pain. So the next time emotion knocks on your door, don't slam it shut. Don't let it move in either. Open the door, let it speak, and listen. Then decide what deserves your energy. That's what makes a Stoic calm in chaos. Not that they don't feel, but that they don't fuse with feeling. They feel deeply, act wisely, and return quickly to equilibrium. And that's where true power lives, not in the absence of storms, but in the stillness at the center of them. Because emotions are waves. You are the ocean. 15. Align with your higher self. Every day you live with two versions of yourself. The one that reacts and the one that decides. One is loud, emotional, impatient, hungry for validation and comfort. The other is quiet, steady, wise, the voice that whispers when the world goes silent. The Stoics called this inner guide the demon, the rational spirit within each person that knows what is right long before the mind debates it. To align with your higher self is to stop living on impulse and start living on principle. It's to let the part of you that sees clearly lead the part of you that craves safety. Marcus Aurelius wrestled with this every morning. He'd remind himself, "You have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this, and you will find strength." That line wasn't a command to suppress emotion. It was an invitation to rise above the reactive self and return to the higher one, the version that acts, not out of fear, but out of understanding. Because every decision you make is a vote for who you become. When you give in to laziness, to anger, to pride, you're feeding the lower self, the part that wants relief, not growth. But when you act with discipline, honesty, and patience, even in small moments, you strengthen the higher self, the part that leads you toward purpose. And here's the hard truth. Your higher self rarely feels good in the moment. It demands effort. It asks for restraint. It forces you to do what's right, even when it's inconvenient. That's why so few people live from that place, because the lower self offers faster rewards. It says, "Rest now, you've done enough. Don't speak up. Stay comfortable. React, don't reflect." and it feels satisfying for a moment. But the higher self plays the long game. It trades temporary comfort for lasting peace. Epictetus taught that every external test, temptation, insult, loss, exists for one reason, to reveal which self is in control. When something happens, he said, remember, it's not what happens that matters, but how you respond that defines you. That's the essence of alignment. It's not perfection, it's returning again and again to the self you respect. Because alignment isn't a one-time choice, it's a constant practice. You'll drift, you'll forget, you'll react, and then regret. But every time you pause, reflect, and realign, you reinforce the habit of rising above your impulses. And eventually, the distance between the person you are and the person you want to be begins to shrink. To live aligned with your higher self means holding yourself accountable in private, not just performing virtue in public. It's asking, would I be proud of this choice if no one ever knew? If the answer is yes, you're walking the right path. Your higher self doesn't chase applause. It doesn't need control. It doesn't cling to certainty. It simply acts from clarity, knowing that virtue, not validation, is the real reward. That's why the Stoic appears calm amid chaos. It's not because they're unfeeling, it's because their compass points inward, not outward. The higher self gives direction when life gives confusion. So how do you strengthen that alignment? You practice awareness. You slow down before reacting. You observe your thoughts and ask, is this fear or wisdom speaking? You choose the response that expands your integrity, even if it costs you comfort. And over time, something powerful happens. Your actions start to match your ideals. Your mind and your soul begin to speak the same language. You stop being torn between who you are and who you wish you were. You become whole. Seneca once said, "A good character, when established, cannot be moved." That's the reward of alignment. An unshakable center. The storms still come, but they don't pull you apart anymore. Because once you learn to live from your higher self, you stop being controlled by the world and start shaping it through your example. And that, in the end, is the Stoic path, not to escape humanity, but to elevate it, beginning with yourself. Everything you've just heard, from facing resistance to mastering emotion, from practicing discomfort to aligning with your higher self, points to one timeless truth. The greatest battle you'll ever fight is not against the world, but within yourself. The Stoics never promised comfort. They promised clarity. They knew that peace isn't something you stumble upon. It's something you build, brick by brick, decision by decision, in the silence of ordinary days. Marcus Aurelius faced betrayal, war, and illness, yet his calm was unbroken because he had already done the inner work. Seneca lost his fortune, his position, even his freedom, but his mind remained sovereign. Epictetus was born a slave, his body broken, yet he became freer than the emperors who ruled over him. What do they all teach us? That true strength doesn't come from circumstance, it comes from character. The mind is like a fortress. Every time you endure discomfort, you reinforce its walls. Every time you act with discipline when it would be easier to quit, you sharpen its gates. Every time you choose reason over reaction, patience over panic, virtue over vanity, you build another layer of armor. But unlike stone, this fortress isn't rigid. It breathes, it bends, it adapts. Because Stoic strength is not hardness, it's harmony. The world will always test you. People will misunderstand you. Comfort will tempt you. Chaos will find you. But none of it has the power to break you, unless you hand it the keys to your mind. That's the ultimate Stoic revelation. Freedom is not the absence of struggle, it's the mastery of self in the middle of it. So as you leave this episode, carry this thought with you. Life isn't waiting for things to get easier. It's waiting for you to get stronger. Stronger in patience, stronger in focus, stronger in the quiet confidence that no matter what comes, you'll meet it with clarity and calm. Because the goal isn't to do hard things for the sake of pride. It's to do them until they no longer feel hard. Until discipline feels like peace, effort feels like alignment, and resilience feels like your natural state. That's when you'll know you've truly trained your mind, not just to survive difficulty, but to use it. And in that moment, you'll see what the Stoics always saw, that the obstacle was never the enemy, it was the architect of your evolution. So step forward, quietly, with calm, with courage, with purpose, and build yourself from the inside out. Before you move on, take one deep breath and ask yourself, what resistance in my life right now is actually trying to make me stronger? That answer might just be your next teacher.